Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, and welcome to this Monday edition of Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and I start with maybe what you might consider a controversial statement, or I think it's a hard-to-dispute statement, though. Maybe you would like to dispute it. Everyone believes in chastity. I think there might be extreme cases where people don't, but even pornographers and rock stars believe in some degree of chastity. Where we often differ is on how much chastity is good for us, how much self-control and restraint in sexual matters is healthy, at what point are we acting out sexually in ways that are simply beneath human dignity. We disagree with that. That's the controversial question of our age, and that is our topic this hour. If you have questions about the virtue of chastity or would like to participate in our conversation this hour about chastity, 888-318-7884 is our number, 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour is Jason Everett. He is the best-selling author of more than 10 books, including The Theology of the Body for Teens and How to Find Your Soulmate Without Losing Your Soul. He has a master's degree in theology as well as undergraduate degrees in counseling and theology from Franciscan University of Steubenville. He's a regular guest here and once worked here at Catholic Answers. Thank you for being with us today, Jason.
Thanks for having me on again. It's good to be back.
My controversial statement that everyone believes in chastity, are you on board with me or no?
I think that makes sense. I think it's almost like what Fulton Sheen said about Catholicism, that, you know, there aren't 100 people who hate the Catholic Church, but there's millions who hate what they mistakenly think the church teaches.
Yeah.
I think it's the same with chastity. There's probably millions of people who resent it as some neurotic attitude towards sexuality, but they're really resenting a misunderstanding of it.
Yeah, that puts me in mind of – I was watching a documentary about New York City in the 50s, and one of the people that was talking about Greenwich Village said everyone was in analysis. Everyone was in Freudian analysis, and it made me think, wow, that Freudian view of human sexuality is really culturally powerful. It transformed the culture and made people start thinking – oh, well, any repression of your or any restraint equals repression, and repression means it's going to come out somewhere else. You're going to be neurotic in some other area of life.
Yeah, which to an extent is true, but the church is not asking us to repress anything.
Yeah.
A lot of people have this mentality that either, you know, I repress my desires to make God happy, or I indulge in all of my passions to make myself happy. I mean, somebody's going to be unhappy here. But what this fails to see is that repression does not please or glorify God, and indulging in lust isn't going to bring us joy either. There is another option between indulgence and repression, which is the integration of our sexual desires, which is what chastity is all about.
888-31-TRUTH is our number. Jason Everett is our guest, and we're discussing chastity today. So you mentioned lust. Is lust always a sin?
Well, yes. And
okay.
Now, a lot of people confuse lust with sexual desire, though. They think that lust is passion. Lust is sexual arousal. And therefore, if I'm being aroused or sexually attracted or passionate, I must be lusting, and so I must be failing at chastity. I think a lot of people give up on practicing chastity because they think that sexual desire is lust. And so as long as they have sexual desires, they're repeatedly failing. But what this fails to understand is that in order for there to be a sin, there has to be consent. And so sexual attractions are bound to come, and in and of themselves, they're not a sin. They're something we experience. But what we do with those attractions can lead either to virtue or to vice. And so the whole goal of chastity is not to eliminate sexual desires and attractions. You know, this idea that if I become really pure, then I'm not going to have any desires anymore. Well, if you don't have desires, it doesn't mean you're pure. It means you're probably dead. You know, this is not the end goal of chastity.
Yeah. And you're not recently dead either. You got to be dead a while before.
Yeah, at least a good 7 hours or so.
Yeah, right. That's what they say anyways. Yeah, so it's interesting, though, that we can have a very positive view of sexual desire. As a matter of fact, I think we're required to have a positive view of sexual desire while saying that that avoiding lust is essential to your full flourishing as a human being.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember growing up thinking, well, if I really get into the church, you know, as a teenager, you know, God is going to rob me of my individuality, of my personality. I'm going to get put into this little mold, and I don't want to be that, because I saw people at our church that were unusual, you know, and I thought, well, you know, holy people are weird. You know, and a friend of mine said, look, you're going to meet holy people that were weird, but they were weird before they were holy. So that's at least some consolation. But you look at the worst sinners of the world, whether it's Al-Qaeda or people in some drug cartel, you know, they're the least unique people on the planet. They're almost clones. But you look at the lives of the saints, and they're radiantly unique, because what sainthood is the full bloom of the human personality. And so God isn't trying to put us into a mold. He's trying to help us become who He's created us to be.
So why is chastity so important? Well, first of all, maybe we should say exactly what we mean by the word chastity. And why is it an important part of being a fully mature person, especially a spiritually fully mature person? What is the deal with chastity?
Well, chastity does not mean celibacy. Celibacy means the state of not being married. It does not mean abstinence either. Abstinence is simply the absence of sex. What chastity is the presence of something, namely the presence of the virtue of purity, which is something that applies to my imagination, my eyes, my speech, my wardrobe, my behavior. So it encompasses the whole human person. And it frees us to love, because we're not under the total dominion of our lusts. And it frees us to know if we're being loved, because it'll bring another person's intentions right up to the surface. Because if they're desiring you simply for your body or for the pleasure that you can give to them, well, you know, it's not really you that they want. It's the pleasure that they can get at your expense. And so if you win them with your body, or you win them with pleasure, you keep them with pleasure. But pleasure is a repeatable thing. They can get it from another person or from the internet. If you win them with, well, everybody has a body. I mean, I can't remember the last woman I met who did not have a body. Okay, like, these are repeatable assets. But if you win him with who you are as a human person, then you are unrepeatable. And as a result, there is relationships typically last longer, because they stand on a firmer foundation. And so this virtue of chastity is something that we're called to, whether you're a priest, a married person, a single person. It's something we're all called to practice.
We're talking chastity today with our guest, Jason Everett. Our number, 888-318-7884. If you would like some help in that area, you're welcome to give a call. If you'd like to challenge maybe the Catholic understanding of chastity, or would just like a deeper understanding of what we mean by living a chaste life, 888-318-7884. Your call is welcome, whatever angle you'd like to come at it from, 888-318-7884. I think she was joking before the show, but one of the women here at Catholic Answers said, your target audience for a show on chastity should be men 18 to 40. Is that a fair thing to say? Or, I mean, it has a certain ring of truth in a way, that that's maybe the primary challenge for men of a certain age.
It does, you know, I mean, yeah, we struggle with it in a particular way, but when you start saying, okay, if you struggle with pornography, guys, here's how to break free from it. Well, what about all the women struggling with this that think, oh, wait a minute, that must be a male sin? Am I like some freak of nature because I'm struggling with lust or pornography or this or that? Wow, this is a guy problem. Man, I don't want to tell my priest. I don't want to go to confession. And it leads them into these cycles of shame and isolation, when lust is not a guy problem. Like, this is a human problem. And so we've got to be able to break through these rigid gender stereotypes of, okay, well, guys struggle with porn and girls struggle with modesty and emotional issues. So you girls go to your cabin at the retreat and talk about emotional things, and boys will talk about how to battle lust. Well, this is kind of an old school form of youth ministry that's a bit outdated now, because these problems are going in both directions. Guys have emotions too. We struggle with relationship issues. Girls struggle with online pornography, thinking, well, sometimes they get into it because of curiosity. Well, who do I need to be? How do I need to act? What do I need to do? What do I need to look like? But women were not created to be porn, but they were created to be loved. And so I think it's so important that we not simply go after chastity as if some 21-year-old male issue. This is a very human issue, whether you're 68 years old, you know, or 14. It's something we're all wrestling with in one way or another.
Yeah, and the internet helps. The internet's made everything
better.
Yeah.
Without question.
All right, we got to take a quick break, Jason. Thanks so much. If you would like to talk with Jason, there still remains a line open, but lines are filling up quickly. We're talking chastity this hour on Catholic Answers Live, 888-318-7884. We'll be right back with that after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Call now, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, my friends. Summer is here. That means summer reading. I have great news. Catholic Answers is having its first ever summer book sale in the online shop at Catholic.com. For a limited time, you can get dozens of great books offered at $10, $5, even as low as $1 a copy. Now is the time to load up on solid Catholic books for yourself, your friends, and your family. Save 50% or more on books by Jimmy Akin, Tim Staples, Rod Bennett, Gary Machuda, and a whole host of great authors. And my personal favorite, all the books in our Catholic Answers Classic series are marked down as well. Log on now and all this month to the store at shop.catholic.com and take advantage of our first ever summer sale. Log on today at shop.catholic.com.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm really excited to tell you about a special limited-time offer we've got right now on subscriptions of our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine. Sign up today during our annual subscription drive, and not only can you save big bucks off the normal price, we'll give you a digital subscription of the magazine for free. Subscribe today by calling 818-487-2011 or by logging online to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. Sign up for a one-year subscription, and we'll give you $10 off the normal price. But better yet, become a two-year subscriber, and we'll up the ante by dropping the price by $20. That's a savings of $10 to $20 plus a free digital subscription when you sign up for Catholic Answers Magazine. Act now, because this is our best offer of the year, and it's only available for a limited time. Subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine before our annual subscription drive ends. Phone 818-487-2011 or go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, talking chastity this hour. Next hour, we're going to talk about the science of life and death with scientist and theologian Dr. Stacy Trisenkos. The beginnings, the ends of life, is it fuzzy? Is it unclear? Or what does science tell us about life and death? We'll cover that then. This hour, if you would like to talk about chastity, 888-31-TRUTH is the number. But before we go to that, let me remind you that all throughout June, Catholic Answers is offering dozens of books and DVDs for more than 50% off. We've got them priced at $10, $5, and $1. Offerings by Jimmy Akin, Tim Staples, Gary Machuda, Matt Frad, many others. If you love Catholic books and DVDs, it's a great time to stock up for summer reading and viewing. Go to shop.catholic.com and look for the $1, $5, $10 book and DVD sale and click that banner. And remember that everything you buy in the sale, during the sale, is shipped to you at a flat rate of $5. Doesn't matter if you buy one or 100, flat rate of $5 on all shipping. Go to shop.catholic.com. Now's your chance. We are with Jason Everett. And Jason, we have lines and lines full to talk with you. You ready to take calls?
Let's go.
All right. Joseph in Huntington Beach, California. You are on with Jason Everett. Your question, please. Joseph? All right. I'm going to come back to Joseph. Maybe he just took a momentary pause. Let's go to Jose, which I believe is Joseph in Spanish. Am I correct about that, Nick? Is Jose Joseph in Spanish? Oh, sí. Muchas gracias.
Is the short form of Joseph.
All right. Jose, you are on with Jason Everett. Your question, please.
Okay, question. How does one explain the dangers of pornography and masturbation to a world that freely accepts it and even applauds it, right?
Right.
One thing I would do is check out there's a relatively new ministry and website called Fight the New Drug. So if you just Google Fight the New Drug, you'll find their site. And it is explaining the harm of pornography, not from a religious perspective, but from a perspective of relationships and neurobiology of what porn is doing to your brain. And they're leading this campaign to basically turn pornography into cigarettes in the sense that, yeah, back in the 50s and 60s, smoking was cool. It was the fashionable thing to do. It's harmless. And then as more science came out, it's like, wow, it's doing what to my lungs? It's doing what to my lifespan, to my teeth, to my body? I don't think I want that. And now as more neurology is coming to the surface and psychology and sociology showing the harm of pornography to our relationships, to our brains, to the capacity to build authentic love, the evidence is becoming more and more insurmountable, not from a religious perspective, but that this is harmful stuff. And so I would check out their website because a lot of the people who are sold on pornography don't want to hear a religious argument against it. And this website and ministry will help arm you with a lot of people, even from Hollywood. I mean, one guy, Russell Brand, you might not know the name, but I'm sure you'd recognize him if you saw him. He was a pretty raunchy British comedian and actor who was married to Katy Perry for a short span of time. Now, a very raunchy actor and comedian. And he came out with like a 10-minute video explaining how pornography has essentially annihilated his capacity to love a woman. And he even quotes in this video without realizing it, Pope John Paul II. He said, yeah, I heard some priest said this or that. And so you have people even coming from the secular world saying, hey, I thought this was harmless, but it turns out not only was I being harmed, but the person in the porn industry, many of which are in the sex trade industry, are being harmed. And the reason why porn is bad isn't because it's addictive or it's illegal if it's below this age or whatever. It's wrong because it's using another person, and no human being was ever created to be used. And when you get hooked on the porn, you get what I would call porn goggles, that you don't even know how to look at another person except through this lens of lust. I remember speaking at an all-girls Catholic high school in the Midwest. The religion teacher brought into the classroom a group of college boys who had graduated the year earlier from a nearby all-boys Catholic school. And she wanted those boys to share with her young women on how they could practice their faith and stay strong in Catholicism once they got off to college. During the course of this little classroom discussion, it came up that one of those young men looks at pornography. And the teacher said, now this is in front of about 30 girls to this young man, well, don't you think that that could present a problem within your marriage? And the young college boy was perplexed. He said, well, pornography and marriage, why would that be a problem? He said, isn't that what a wife is for? That's actually not what a wife is for, because marriage is not the fulfillment of porn. Porn is the distortion of human love. And when we enter into marriage looking at women as some outlet to be used for our gratification, it annihilates intimacy. And so I would encourage you to research this so you can explain it from a neurological perspective of how it's actually sculpting the structure of your brain to expect all women to live up to this fantasy of a disposable supermodel, how it's training us to associate sexual joy with these dirty, illicit, forbidden sexual fantasies and novelty. And when then you try to transition to loving a human being who's not some dirty, illicit, forbidden sexual fantasy who's different every 5 minutes, your brain has a very difficult time adjusting because you had trained it to associate sexual joy with this when reality is totally different. This is why in Japan now, I read one study that said 40% of young Japanese men are not even interested in having a sexual relationship with an actual woman, because they're too satisfied with what they're getting with virtual reality porn. Well, who would want to bother with the risk of rejection and the demands of a woman's emotions and commitment? Hey, I can just live in my fantasies with my pixels. Who needs an actual person? And so I think the best argument against porn is the lives of those who become addicted to it and how it robs them of their capacity for authentic human love. But again, check out that website, Fight the New Drug, and then we've also got some good stuff at chastityproject.com.
Jose, great question. How do you make sense of that answer? Does that work for you?
I think it works great. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Jose. What strikes me is a couple things. Jason, in your answer, you don't make a reference to religion. You don't make a religious justification. And you also don't make reference, and I'm not faulting you for this, you're not making reference to the harms that pornography does to the performers or the producers of pornography. You speak directly to the user of pornography saying it's hurting you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it is important, you know, as you had mentioned, to address those other harms. Like, okay, this woman who's behind the camera, really, who is she? I mean, she's the center of attention, or he is the center of the attention, but they're completely ignored. What you've got is the divorce of the body from the soul. I want the body. Who cares about the soul? I read of one woman who left the pornography industry. I think she said after her fourth abortion, the toll it was taking on her physiologically and emotionally. I read of one woman, she said after the film was shot for the porn video, she had to go to the hospital because her body was so damaged from acts. That had to go to the hospital, but the porn producer wouldn't even drive her. He just called an Uber to pick her up to take her to the emergency room. If you realize who's really behind that camera, it's not these just happy, well-adjusted people who are making a great living off pornography. I mean, you've got individuals who are living in a state of drunkenness and depression. That's why the suicide rates of those in the porn industry is astronomical. If we could just learn to see them as human beings, then we could live in this culture, I think, where porn isn't, rejected because, it's shameful. It's rejected because, well, how could I treat a human being like that? No, we're better than this as a civilization, I think.
Jose, very grateful for the call. Thank you so much. Tom, listening on 1148 a.m. in Boise, Idaho, you are up next. If I can get you there, Tom. Tom, are you on with us?
Yes, sir, I am.
Tom, your question.
Question is, why do or did the most holy people who ever lived practice total and complete sexual abstinence? Of course, the primary example is our Lord Jesus, his mother Mary, his earthly father Joseph. And then if you go through the list of saints, and I'm sure I, of course, don't know all of them, but Saint Teresa of Avila, Mother Teresa of Calcutta, seems like everyone, and that's not true, but the majority are totally, completely sexually abstinent. I'm just curious your answer to that question.
Okay. Yeah, a very good question and an insightful one as well. I think first we need to think about the canonization process. What is the process by which a person becomes canonized? Many people who become canonized belong to religious orders because when a member of their own order dies in a state of great sanctity, the order wants to promote this person. Oh, look what God did through this wonderful person. You have an entire religious organization, whether it's the Dominicans behind Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati or something like that, kind of pushing forward this cause for the canonization, whereas when you have a typical husband and wife, there doesn't tend to be as much interest, and thrust behind the canonization of those individuals, despite the heights of sanctity to which they may have attained. Now, what we're seeing recently, about 3 years ago, the parents of Saint Therese of Lisieux were canonized. And so here we have a married couple who I think was really brought to the forefront because of the holiness of their child, Saint Therese the Little Flower. But I'd recommend, if you haven't spent much time, reading the lives of Louis Martin and Zélie Guérin, who are the parents of Saint Therese of Lisieux, because I think the church is going to try to start canonizing more married couples. There was another one. This guy's name was Saint Mark Ji Tiang Zeng. He was a husband and a father, and he lived in China in the late 1800s, and he became addicted to opium, the drug. He was a doctor and came down with a stomach ailment, and to treat himself, he took some opium, which was a common treatment at that time, and he got addicted. He went to confession. Priest gave him absolution and some advice for overcoming it, and he fell back into it. And this happens so often, the priest told him, well, don't come back to confession and don't receive the Eucharist anymore because you're obviously not sorry enough for your sins to stop them. Now, this is bad pastoral advice for someone who didn't understand the mental health issues behind addiction. And so this guy, Mark, stayed away from confession for a year, 2 years, continued going to church and staying faithful to his wife and their children and praying, but stayed addicted to this and kept fighting to overcome it, but falling on his faith for 10 years, 15, 20, 30 years, addicted to opium. He started praying that God would free him from, you know, this addiction, but he never fully broke free. He started praying that God would make him a martyr because he could see no other way that he could enter heaven. And God answered his prayer in the year 1900. The Boxer Rebellion came into China, and they started persecuting Catholics. And he and his family all rounded up to be executed. And as they're being dragged off to death, his grandson said to him, you know, Mark, where are we going? And Mark said to him, we're going home. And they brought them to the place of execution. Mark begged all of the executioners to kill him last because he didn't want anyone in the family to die without him there present supporting them. One by one, nine members of his family were beheaded, and then he last was beheaded while he was singing the litany of the Blessed Virgin Mary, and now he's a canonized saint in the Catholic Church. And thanks be to God. You know, this is a bit of a messy saint story. It's not what you see in the stained glass windows, but it's proof that the saint isn't the one who doesn't have a mess. Okay, the saint is the one who gives his mess utterly to Jesus Christ. And thankfully, I think in the wisdom of the Church, the next few decades and centuries, we're going to see more and more examples of these wonderful witnesses of sanctity, even within the married state.
Tom, great question. Thanks so much for that. More on chastity and living chastity, the virtue of chastity, how to acquire the virtue of chastity, why it's important, and any other question you might have for Jason Evert right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Check out EW10's official YouTube channel.
Just follow the link on our homepage at EWTN.com or go to YouTube.com/EWTN.
Watch EWTN's live shows or today's homily from the Daily Mass.
Click the upload button to see our most recent clips.
You can also find all of EWTN YouTube content by clicking the playlist button.
It's all on the official EWTN YouTube channel at YouTube.com/EWTN.
Visit today.
What difference does it make who or what you worship or what you believe? Sharing the faith used to make some people mad because it challenged their own strong beliefs. Today, it makes a lot of people yawn because they don't have strong beliefs about anything. Religious indifference is the great spiritual sickness of our age, a product of the relativism that dominates modern culture. This is Matt Nelson, and in my new book, Just Whatever, I'll take down the building blocks of religious indifference one by one. We'll look at the different kinds of indifference you tend to encounter in your friends and family members to see where they come from and why they're seductive. What you believe matters. Find out why and what to do about it in my new book, Just Whatever. You can order your copy of Just Whatever by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers is a media ministry that serves Christ by explaining and defending the Catholic faith. We help Catholics grow in their faith, we bring former Catholics home, and we lead non-Catholics into the fullness of the truth. Our goal is to be the most trusted and accessible source for sharing, explaining, and defending the Catholic faith through as many media as possible, from personal contact to the most innovative means of mass communication. Have questions? We've got answers. Catholic Answers. Visit us today at Catholic.com or call us with your questions at 619-387-7200.
Welcome back to our great big Monday show here on Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Hour two, don't miss scientist and theologian Dr. Stacy Trisankos will be here to talk about the science of life and death. She can give you both the theology and the science of those relatively pressing questions. So we'd love to have you here for that hour. This hour, we're talking about chastity with Jason Evert, formerly of Catholic Answers, now of pretty much anywhere they need somebody to talk about chastity. He travels all over to do that. You can give me a website, Jason. Where can people find you?
ChastityProject.com.
ChastityProject.com. And you publish as well. Your imprint is called Totus Tuus
Press.
Press. Mm-hmm. And yeah. you got a brand new book from Christopher West coming out. And when will it be out in the title?
Yeah, that should be out in about 3 weeks, and it's called Eclipse of the Body. And it discusses the fact that the meaning of male and female, femininity, masculinity, family, father, mother, everything's kind of getting shifted and redefined right now, and none of the new definitions are even definite in themselves. And it's almost as the meaning of the human body has been obscured and eclipsed. And he's going to explain kind of where this came from and how we can, again, reveal God's plan for humanity in our bodies.
That's one of our listeners, I've been watching just a little bit of the comments on Facebook as we go through the show, was suggesting that ultimately we're moving towards a kind of desire to be post-human, to just give up on our humanity together, and feels that all this pornography and all this virtual stuff and the abandonment of male and female, it's all part of a movement that will culminate in saying we're just tired of being human, we want to move on and be computers or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's all variants of the same issue of separating the body from the person. I mean, that's really what pornography is. That's what gender theory is.
Yeah.
It's the devil using the same tactic, but in different ways, you know. And so a lot of people are wondering, my goodness, you know, I want to be compassionate and respectful towards individuals struggling with this area, but how do I explain why the church teaches what she teaches, and ultimately why the church's teachings on homosexuality, contraception, gender theory is good news? You know, I think we need to get back to that proposition of the faith as good news instead of perpetually being in a kind of defensive.
888-318-7884, the number. We go now to Anonymous in Riverside, California. Anonymous, you are on with Jason Everett. Your question, please.
Hi. My question has to do with homosexuality and chastity. Say there's a couple who converted and want to be faithful to the Catholic Church, but are in love with each other and don't want to lose each other. Could they kind of go into something similar like the Virgin Mary, St. Joseph, where they were married, but they were celibate, to be faithful to the Church?
Okay, very good question. And again, thank you for calling in. Two things to address here is one is the question of living together. I guess three questions. One is living together. Two is the status of a marriage. And three is their desire for union. We'll start there with their desire for union. The desire when you fall in love with someone and you want to love them is to be united. And St. John Chrysostom, I remember, once said that a young husband should say to his wife that, you know, his greatest, you know, what would cause him more suffering than anything is to be separated, to be different than her in mind or in spirit. And he said, so I want to live my life with you in such a way that we may be assured of not being separated in the life reserved for us. And what he's saying is that I just don't want temporary physical or emotional union with you. I want eternal union with you. I want to be with you before the beatific vision of God for all eternity. I never want to be separated from you. And so that's almost the divine imprint of love on a relationship. That, yeah, I might want to be with you tonight. I mean, think of some high school boy wants to sleep with his girlfriend, but he says, you know what, I might want to do this, but you know what, I know what's not best for her. And so I'm going to make this sacrifice of abstinence because that is going to be a greater expression of love than making love. And so individuals who experience same-sex attractions, I think, can realize that abstinence in their friendship is an expression of love. It's not the denial and the negation of love. They're bringing their love now to a sacrificial level where they're actually saying in their bodies the words of the Mass, like, this is my body given up for you. These desires, these passions, these temptations I have, I'm giving them up for you. And so they become a very visible image, I think, of Christ's love on earth. Individuals who experience same-sex attractions choosing to practice an abstinent lifestyle. Now, living together, the advice the church would be the same they would give for two people who are not married, that why would a man live with the woman who he's sexually attracted to who he's not married? Not only would that be a great occasion of sin and temptation, but it would also be a scandal to those on the outside looking in who would simply assume they're being sexually intimate. The third issue is that of marriage. Two men simply cannot become married. And this is not a question of permission, like, can the church give them permission to marry? It's the question of possibility. Like, is it possible for me to marry a woman when I'm already married? No. Is it possible for me to marry two women? No. It's not a matter of the church just caving in and letting me marry two women, that relationship would not be what a marriage is. And so when it comes down to the church's teaching on marriage, it isn't about hatred or bigotry. It's simply about the fact that God has created marriage to be one thing, and the church simply does not have the authority to redefine it. But instead of getting hung up on the marriage question or the cohabitation question, I think we need to focus on the goodwill that's present in their hearts to desire that authentic union through that sacrifice of practicing chastity, that they can still retain their friendship. And I'd recommend them getting plugged into a local chapter of Courage, where they can meet other people who experience same-sex attractions and are practicing chastity. There's even a new website that just came out on this. It's called EdenInvitation.com. So Eden, like the Garden of Eden, then the word invitation.com. And I'd encourage you to check it out because it's just a great brand new resource for those who experience same-sex attractions and are choosing to glorify God in and through their bodies.
Okay, Anonymous.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're
appreciate
welcome.
It. I wonder, Jason, I think we have discussed this before, but it does strike me that the hypersexualization of our society has hurt male friendships terribly and female friendships terribly. Like that for it seems to me in the past and in societies that are not kind of afflicted with this hypersexuality that we have, that men could love their friend passionately. There was a passionate, wonderful love there. But now people, that's harmed because there's just this sniggering that goes along with it. Like that, well, obviously, that, but not obviously. That's not the case.
And I think it's especially confusing for the young people. I mean, one girl came to me and she said, you know, Jason, I'm kind of confused because my friends think I'm a lesbian and I think I'm straight, so maybe I'm bisexual. And I said, well, what's going on? And she said, well, the guys in my school are really perverted and violating, and I'm really disgusted by them. But there is a girl on campus. I come alive in her presence. We can talk for hours and she's beautiful and funny and smart. And my friends are telling me that's a girl crush. And so I should experiment with her to see if that's really who I am. And I don't know what to think. And I said to her, I don't know if anyone's not told this to you before. You're supposed to be repulsed by everything repulsive. You're supposed to be attracted to everything attractive. So your friend, her wit, her charm, her personality, doesn't that all draw you to her? She said, it does. I said, look, I go to a Bible study and there's an 85-year-old man there with this gigantic beard and I'm completely attracted to this man. Like if there's an empty seat next to him, that's where I'm sitting. I just want to be in his presence, his warmth, his joy, his charisma. Because guess not, not every sexual attraction, you know, not every human attraction is a sexual attraction.
Right.
And the girl's eyes lit up and she said, I'd never thought about it like that before. That makes so much sense.
But it's how sad that she never thought about it like that before, because there was a time when that was how you thought about that. You fall in love with your friends. That's part of what friendship is. And it's exciting and as I said, passionate. But that doesn't mean I do think they're confused. Well, that must mean that I am oriented in a certain way.
Yeah, and they're being indoctrinated with this from kindergarten now. They've got the gender unicorn they're using in the classrooms showing kids, well, this is your gender identity, then this is your gender expression, and then that's your sex, and then this is your sexual attractions, these are your emotional attractions.
Yeah.
And just starting with this anthropology from like before even grade school, telling these kids, well, this is who you are. If you experience this, that is your identity. So your attractions then become your identity. But if we buy off on that, you know, if anyone on earth identifies themselves by their sexual attractions, I think life is going to get real confusing real fast. Because if I'm attracted to a woman who's not my wife, is that my identity? No, it's not. An attraction is something you experience.
Right.
Your identity is a son or daughter of God.
Right. Well, it's very helpful. And it is a tragic loss. The loss of friendship is a terrible, terrible loss in our culture. Let's go to Ron in Illinois, listening on Covenant Radio. Ron, we only have a couple minutes before the break. So is that going to be time to talk about what you wanted to talk about? Or do you want me to take the break and we'll come back to you?
Well, I just wanted to talk as I used to have, I guess I'm a recovered addict of pornography. And I'm a married man in my middle 40s and a lifelong, use of pornography. And, I I've been married for nearly 20 years, much of which was, you know, clouded by the scourge of my life. And, you know, I can only say me being able to step away from pornography when it's everywhere in around us. You know, the only thing that helped me was I realized how much I was giving up in my relationship with my wife. And, you know, I decided I wasn't praying, but I decided to embrace love. And you know, pornography is horrible. I cannot get it out of, I now have gotten it out of my head. It comes at the worst times, you know, and when it first, you know, it just embeds itself into your brain, and it's something that it's hard to get away from. But I can tell you what, it is the one of the main reasons I know that the grace of God is alive and well in my life. It's as soon as I realized, hey, I've been 4 years without pornography. Once I started going to confession and talking to my priest about it, I mean, this was well after the fact, but, you know, I just want people to realize, and I believe that chastity in marriage and pornography, all this goes hand in hand. It started when I was in my early teens, and it has affected my life, you know, and I just, you know, want people to know that there is hope, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't take iron will, but it takes, I believe, embracing the love in your life. And because we've sex is part of love, but it is not the emotion. I mean, there's so much more to it. We've, you know, yeah. And I hope I'm not rambling on.
No, you're not, Ron. It's beautiful testimony. And it's very powerful testimony, because I think people don't really believe that the sacraments have the power to do that. I think that was my own experience as a younger person. Do the sacraments have the power to heal it? Whatever it is, they have the power to bring you back from it. I'm very grateful for that, Ron. Jason, you probably want to make a response to Ron. Can I just get the break out of the way, and we'll do that when we come back?
Sounds good.
Okay, Ron, hang on if you can. We'll be right back with more. Discussing chastity today on Catholic Answers Live with Jason Everett after this.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Join us this September for a conference that is sure to ignite and inform your faith.
Every time we come here, it's just an incredible experience.
I love it. I love it. I'm so glad I came here.
And I'm having the time of my life.
Early bird pricing ends July 2nd. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register.
These guys are so amazing. I always get so much, learn so much. I've already signed up for next year.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections website is homeschoolconnections.com.
God helps those who help themselves. Preach the gospel always. When necessary, use words. We all hear sayings like these, and we assume they come from the Bible, the saints, or famous Christian writers. Nobody can seem to place their origin, but by sheer repetition, they've acquired a halo of truth. In my new book, What the Saints Never Said, I look at over 40 of these well-known sayings and track them back to their original sources. You'll be surprised at what I found. Some are close to what was really said. Many were misattributed or twisted beyond their original meaning, and more than a few of these sayings were simply made up. I hope by setting the record straight, I can make you aware of the theological errors that can lead us away from the faith and offer you authentic quotes from Scripture, saints, and scholars that will draw you closer to our faith. Get your copy of What the Saints Never Said by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit MysticMonkCoffee.com. That's MysticMonkCoffee.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks so much for being with us. We're talking chastity today with Jason Everett, who you can find out all about at the Chastity Project. Oh, no, or is it Chastity Project?
ChastityProject.com.
Just Chastity
Project.
ChastityProject.com. You can find out all about Jason and what he does. And we were talking with Ron when we went to the break. And Ron was sharing with us about his overcoming of the distortions of pornography in his life. And not a rare story, but a beautiful one every time you hear it. And Ron was talking about the sacrament of confession and how it was part of, and talking with his priest was part of becoming free from pornography. Before we go, you wanted to address Ron, but there's also an anonymous caller who called and didn't want to stay on the line, but asked that we answer this on the air. And she said, "What is your advice for undoing the distortion of pornography when you were exposed early on?" And she was exposed very early in her life as a young child to pornography. But now you're married and trying to live in a healthy relationship. What are some first steps to take? So I thought I would share that with you. It seems that that's connected to what Ron had to say. Jason.
Yeah, well, first I want to thank you, Ron, for calling in, for your testimony. I've just given people hope. You know, a lot of people, I think, that struggle with addictions to pornography and attachments to it wonder, am I ever going to break free? Is this like who I am? I'm the porn addict. I'm never going to win. But, you know, like you said, love is what gives you that motivation to be able to break free, not just the guilt and the shame and the regret, but just the desire to love and to love rightly. And so I just want to thank you for your testimony. And then to Anonymous, who'd left that message, I'm in the same boat in a sense with you, where I first saw pornography when I was probably in second grade, riding around the neighborhood, you know, on our bicycles, you know, finding some dirty magazine in the gutter, and, well, what's this? And, you know, and that got me hooked on that stuff early through grade school and had it up all the way through high school. And I'm kind of thankful that I got out of pornography just as the internet was coming in. I remember a friend of mine saying, "Hey, look, you can see some of this online." And, you know, he takes his AOL floppy disk and puts it in for a couple free hours. And, you know, the image was so grainy and took so long to download. By the time the picture showed up, I had pretty much finished puberty and lost interest altogether. You know, and it's a different story now. I mean, on the phones, on the internet, what's available and so accessible leaves such scar tissue. And especially when we're young kids being exposed to this stuff, how do we scrub it out? How do we heal those wounds? One, I think it's important that we not simply approach it from a solely human or spiritual perspective. We need to look at both of these things. The human perspective, sometimes it's really helpful and even necessary to go to counseling, to get those parts of our memory healed a bit, to get some help in that area. Because when we go through this type of sexual abuse, and I think it is when a young child is exposed to this, it's almost like being in a car accident and walking away from the scene of the accident. You know, because I can live with a broken rib. I can live with a broken leg. I'm going to have a pretty nasty limp, but I can have enough coping mechanisms to get through life. God doesn't want us to have to live with those crutches. And I know it's scary to want to go back to the hospital and reset that bone. And so we kind of stay away sometimes. But there are great Catholic counselors out there. Two websites I'd recommend are integrityrestored.com, where you can become familiar with the work of Dr. Peter Kleponis, Father Sean Kilcally. They've got great stuff on how to heal the effects of pornography. And also a place like catholictherapists.com, where you can find some good therapists with a Catholic background to help this. So first, you've got the human and psychological element. Then also the second is the spiritual part. When those flashbacks come back, or those memories, sometimes we don't know what to do with them. We just want to stuff them. But I've found one thing to be very helpful, and that's responding to those flashbacks with love. Now, how do we do that? Well, the Catechism tells us there's four types of prayer. The first type of prayer we could do is thanksgiving. And so if you're tempted to lust after someone instead of seeing them as an occasion of sin, stop and be grateful for the beauty that God has given to them. You could pray Psalm 84, "How lovely is your dwelling place, Lord mighty God," to fight temptation with gratitude. Second form of prayer is that of contrition, where when lustful thoughts come to mind or tempting people come into sight, we can pause to ask God for the times we've failed to look rightly at the other person. A third form of prayer is intercession or supplication, that when maybe some flashback of some person that we saw in that industry comes to mind, hey, I can stop and I can love that person right now by offering a Hail Mary for them or praying or fasting for them. And then the fourth form of prayer is adoration. To be able to take the beauty of the human form in our imagination, although it's been distorted, and realize all of that beauty came from God. And we just ask him to help untwist our understanding of the way that it's been warped in our minds and to give adoration and praise to God. And so this is almost like a form of spiritual Tai Chi. That's a form of martial art where you take the aggression of your opponent and all his energy against you and you turn it against him. So where the devil may be using scar tissue and flashbacks or hurts from your past to damage you, your faith, your marriage, you're able to take that offense from the devil and turn it around and to turn it into something beautiful. So with those two wings, so to speak, the spiritual part and the human and psychological part together, this can help us to heal some of those hurts from the past so that God can fulfill his promise that he said in the Old Testament that he will restore the years that the locust, that the plague has eaten. So God bless you and be assured of the prayers of myself and the listeners as you continue to heal.
Thank you, Ron, and thank you for that anonymous caller who asked that we read her question. Let's go to Dean now in Houston, listening on 1430 AM. Dean, you're on with Jason Everett. Your question, please.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of us out there that are single. I'm middle-aged. I'm 50-plus, and, you know, I'm not single by choice necessarily. I would love to be in a relationship, but, you know, trying to practice my faith. And I know those four or five things you just mentioned, certainly prayer and such are ways to approach this, but what practical advice can you give to people like me that are kind of beyond that point of finding, you know, their prince or princess in my case, and, you know, still trying to live our Catholic faith?
You know, thank you for the call, you know, Dean. One thing I would say is that you're not necessarily beyond your age or finding that prince or princess. I think there's probably a lot of women listening to this show right now who might be like, Dean, don't stop. Don't give up. You know, we're out here. Maybe we were in a marriage before that had been annulled and, you know, it wasn't what we had ever hoped for or planned for in marriage. And now we're trusting and hoping in God's plan for our life, or we've just never found the right guy. We're still out there looking. Like, there is still a possibility. Many people find their vocation to the priesthood when they're in their 40s or 50s. Many find their first marriage to be happening at that time. So not necessarily to close the door and say it's too late. There's good Catholic dating websites that are out there, whether it's CatholicMatch.com or CatholicSingles.com or Ave Maria Singles. And, you know, we can't vouch for everybody who's on those platforms at the level of their spirituality. Some would be, you know, more devoted than others. But not to give up on that quest if you feel that God might still be calling you to that vocation. But in the meantime, to do as much as you can to surround yourself with like-minded individuals. There's a conference called the National Catholic Singles Conference that's hosted every year. And I think it's just good to be around other people, you know, who are living the faith, wanting to practice chastity, and open to God's plan for their vocation, although they might not have found it yet, even though they wish they found it 20 years ago. And so it's so important just to have that community, just to get involved in your parish, your diocese, your community, to find more like-minded individuals so you realize that you're not the only person out there who's carrying this cross right now and wanting to glorify God in your body despite your life perhaps not unfolding in the way that you had expected. So I would say, A, don't give up on hope. B, if you're still interested, check out some of those good online Catholic dating services. And then C, surround yourself with like-minded, faithful Catholics so you can realize you're on the right side here and just to continue to stay faithful to God.
Dean, thanks so much for the call. I don't know if you know this, Jason, but 53 is actually the peak of a male's life. That's for men, 53 is the best year. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah. I thought you were going to ask me how old I am, but no.
How old? I was going to say, but I didn't, you know, on air. I figured, wait till the show ends.
I just was surprised that Dean feels that his time of finding his princess is over, and he's the same age I am, and that's the perfect age. We're unbelievably desirable at this age. You wouldn't.
Next caller, please.
All right, Robert in Houston, you are up next with Jason Everett. Oh, no, I didn't realize the clock. Sorry, Robert. Time's up because I had to be awkward with Jason. I had to make it all uncomfortable. ChastityProject.com is where you can find out more from Jason. You just made a brand new study book for the movie The Dating Project. You can find that at Ignatius Press. And you have Christopher West's book coming out in 3 weeks.
Dating Project's going to be coming out on Ascension Press.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, I thought it was... Yep. All right. Very good. Jason Everett, thank you so much for being with us. And it's such a helpful hour when you're here. Really appreciate it.
I'm glad to be on. And again, that other website I had recommended was EdenInvitation.com for those who experience same-sex attractions. But again, thank you for having me on, and God bless you guys.
And you too. Next hour, Dr. Stacey Trusenkos will be here. We're going to talk about the science of life and death right after this on Catholic Answers Live.